Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening, everyone. This is Bonnie Kay, and welcome to the Straight Wives Talk Show. This is a hard-hitting show that discusses the complexity of marriages between straight women to gay men. Each week, my guests and I discuss issues that affect over 4 million women in this country and millions more around the world who find themselves unknowingly married to a gay or bisexual man. Tonight, I have a very special guest with us, and her name is Kim Roman Corliss. Kim, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Bonnie. Great to be here.
And a little bit about Kim. Kim is a motivational speaker. She's a life coach. And she's also an author. She's authored a number of articles on the issue of emotional abuse and marriage problems. And one of our members from my Straight Wives Club was kind enough to send me an article that Kim had written. And I was so blown away by it. I thought, wow, I wish I could get this woman to come on the show. I'm going to track her down. Sure enough, she was so kind to agree to come on tonight. So I really do appreciate it, Kim. And the women who are part of our support network, I would say that if you really talk to them, for the most part, not in every case, but I would say the overwhelming majority of women are living in relationships where there is emotional abuse because these were relationships that were not meant to be to start with. And when somebody's in a place where he doesn't want to be because he feels he has to be there, then naturally he starts getting angry. And rather than tell the truth and externalize it, he externalizes it and turns the blame on his wife. So I can't begin to tell you how many of our women go to bed at night crying themselves to sleep, feeling that they're worthless, unwanted, having their self-esteem and sexual esteem, you know, stripped down, and not knowing why. And that, to us, I think, is the biggest problem because gay was not the issue when we got married, so we thought, because
right,
we didn't understand
right.
that was even an issue. So you're kind of living there, living in a relationship with a 500-piece jigsaw puzzle. you can never put it together because one of the pieces was left out, like I like to call it. And so you're always trying to make it fit and make it right, but you can never do it because you're missing the piece that's telling you what the problem is. And many women live like this for 10, 15, 20, 30, 40 years before they put two and two together or before their husbands decide it's time for them to tell the truth and leave. So it's a very hard thing on a person with emotional abuse. And I know that you have, you know, a wonderful article that I found about this emotionally abusive relationships, reclaiming your power. Because often when you're in a relationship that's emotionally abusive, you really feel like you have no power. So maybe you could start off by talking a little bit about that.
Oh, yeah. You know, and I think what happens is you just wonder, how the heck did I get here? Like, what just happened? It's a different scenario, but I can relate in the aspect of not understanding what happened and how you got there. I was... as you know, you've read some of my stuff, but I was basically married to a guy, and literally within a week, even on our honeymoon, he started becoming verbally abusive. And I just was I was just determined to figure out what was wrong and fix it. And my guess is that's what often happens to your audience, is that you feel like you can fix it. Like you can, if the more you understand and the kinder you are, the better it'll be. And you can work through it. And, you know, if you're compassionate and maybe more helpful, then things might change. And I find that a lot of people that get into these situations are people that are very giving and nurturing and caring. I know that the situation that I was in, if it would have happened to somebody else I know or a friend of mine, they wouldn't have put up with it. But I really was determined to make it work and to fix it. And I think
And I always
have
said that there's a prototype that men look for, men like this, who are living some kind of life that's, you know, either a secret kind of life or they have their own issues. If they're even, you know, plenty of stray predators that are out there looking for women who are weak and who are kind and giving. And let me just ask you this, since you were kind enough to, you know, bring up about your relationship. I tell women it's not that you have to feel that you're blindsided, because that doesn't necessarily start off that way. These guys are very clever and very cunning to make you feel you're the most important person in the world to them. It's not like they're starting out like, oh, insulting you and making you feel terrible and you're going to keep going with them. Is that right?
Oh, yeah. No, absolutely. You absolutely cannot take ownership of their issues. And it's not going to do anything but put good energy after bad if you sit around beating yourself up. I mean, all of us are human. Even if the person you're with is not cunning and horrible, but just kind of opens up and discovers it, you're still going to go through some sort of aspect of self-blame and questioning. And what I always think is super helpful is just to understand at the beginning, like, where you came from. And what I did is I started realizing that I was kind of set up for this. I was raised in a very controlling environment where I was supposed to fix things. I wasn't, my opinions weren't valued. My worthiness was questioned. And so I totally was set up for this guy I married. I mean, I got him. I totally understood him. The abuse came after we were married, but he was still manipulative even before we got married. So I think when you're going through the situation and saying to yourself, you know, oh my God, I should have figured it out, or what should I have done differently? I think that, you know, there's nothing wrong with self-reflection and, okay, what could I have done differently? But I think the other piece of it is kind of looking at how you were raised, because we're all carrying around this like hidden set of values, right? We're raised in families. You could be raised in a family that values money, or one that values athletics, or one that values looks, or whatever it may be. And so we're kind of raised that way, and that's the value system we walk out the door with. And sometimes we kind of align ourselves with people that we understand and we know. So the hard part of that is to take the stand back, figure out where that came from, and figure out how you can be more assertive in your communication and take your power back one step at a time.
A lot of times, Kim, and maybe you can correct me if I'm wrong, I find that many women who find themselves in relationships that are dysfunctional are coming from relationships that are dysfunctional, as far as having problems within their family units, as far as emotional abuse, physical abuse, you know, domestic violence, coming up in a home like that, mental illness, drug addiction, alcoholism. And so often,
absolutely,
you know, when you're really vulnerable, you know, something may look a lot better than what you have, because whatever you have is so bad that any kind of relief, I've had women tell me they thought this was going to be the solution. The guy was being so nice to them compared to what they were seeing at home. So sometimes,
right,
I always tell women, you know, you have to first find what an unnormal is. You know, if you're coming from dysfunction and moving into dysfunction, you've never really had a chance to learn what is functional. Would you say that's true?
Absolutely, Bonnie. And, you know, you're right, because the reality is just understanding where you came from and looking at the dynamics of that. I immediately jumped into therapy, and it took me a couple of years to kind of get my head around exactly what I'd grown up. I'd grown up with a very functional alcoholic mother. I had grown up in this family system that had a very different set of values, and I was trying to mimic that in my relationship. So I think you're absolutely right. I think that sometimes that's what we know and we're comfortable with, and a lot of times the other part of it is money plays a big part into this. Sometimes these guys have got money, and they grew up. And you get gifts, and you get wined and dined, and, you know, you could have a beautiful, wonderful night, and this could happen in any bad relationship, and you get wined and dined, and you get gifts, and you go home, and you go to sleep. And you're thinking, I mean, I just remember thinking, should I be thinner? I mean, maybe I'm not tall enough, you know, whatever it is. I mean, what could possibly be wrong? Are my breasts not big enough? I mean, you start doing this self-doubt without stepping back and looking at the entire relationship going, oh, wait a minute, something's really off here. I mean, this isn't healthy. And instead we internalize it and we take that problem and think what's wrong with me instead of what's wrong with the situation.
And unfortunately, I'm working with women whose husbands are telling them it is them. So to add to this, you know, because rather than tell them the truth that they're gay, they'd rather, you know, say it's your fault because you're too heavy, you're too thin. I've had women spend thousands of dollars on all kinds of surgery to look better, to feel better, gastric bypasses, breast reductions, breast increases, anything to try to make their husbands want them, because they are internalizing it because their husbands aren't telling them, if only you were this, if only you were that, then they do that, and it's still no different because that's not what it's about to start with. So then
right.
they really feel defeated. They feel that there must be more wrong with them than anybody's saying. So it's very,
that
very
right.
sad.
Exactly. Well, and I think, you know, anytime you're trying to fix yourself or somebody, there's an issue. I mean, there's nothing wrong with growth and learning new tools and, you know, just being a good person. But if somebody's saying to you, you know, if your breasts were bigger, then this would be different. You know, you have to be careful of the if-then comment. If you do this, then this will be that. You know, my past experience was I had a lot of narcissism in my family, so it was never enough, ever, ever, ever enough. And at some point, I started realizing, now, wait a minute. And with my ex, it was like if I made more money, if we had sex more on a regular basis, if, you know, I bought him more toys and cars or whatever it was. But it was always, if I have this, then I'll be happy. And I remember you know, years later, like, wait a minute, this is never going to stop. I mean, there's a whole pattern here. So if somebody's coming to you and saying, you know, if your teeth were whiter, I'd find you more attractive. I mean, it really is kind of an absurd thought process to think if your body's fixed and then they'll find you more attractive. I mean, that comes from internally. And I think another thing that's important to point out, and I certainly had experience with this, is I'd really never had a healthy relationship. So I didn't know that what I was experiencing was that odd. And I thought it was bad, and I wasn't happy, but I didn't know it was so off-kilter that a healthy relationship would never warrant that. So, it's you know what I mean? I had never had it growing up. I hadn't experienced it. I had walked into this relationship with this man, and I was just continuing down the same path. I mean, you know, I was always trying to serve. I was never doing enough. I was always trying to please. But what sort of thing happening is things started escalating. And you know, your audience probably finds the same thing. It either gets passive, which is also a form of escalation, right? If somebody doesn't deal with you, that's passive aggressive as it is. If somebody won't talk to you, if somebody won't deal with an issue, then there's a problem. But it never occurred to me that that was not a sign, that that was a sign of a bad or unhealthy relationship. I just thought it was him being him.
And so, I think that if you haven't come from a healthy relationship, I think that we are, I always tell our women that you are the role model for your daughters, that they learn from you, they're going to be your legacy, and whatever you're showing them is the normal is what they're going to go for. So when women tell me, I don't know what to do, I say, let me put it to you this way. If your daughter would come to you and tell you that she's met a man just like your, her dad, and that she's getting married to him and spending her life with him, what would you tell her? Would you tell her that's wonderful, or would you tell her to start running the other way? And if you know that you're going to tell her to start running the other way, then why is it good enough for you if it's not, then you have to listen to your own advice. Because isn't that true? Children repeat what their parents do?
Of course.
Just learn behavior.
Which is the essence of how we started this. Absolutely. But that is where we get into, you have to take care of you. So that's part of taking your power back, reclaiming your life. I mean, this goes for any of your children, boys, girls, young or old. You are mimicking and teaching them along the path that you go. And you're showing them what's acceptable, right? So we teach people how to treat us. If somebody comes into a room, right, and it's horrible to somebody, and you just walk away and don't deal with it, you're teaching that person that you're going to take it. So, I've said to people, look, if you can't make the change for you, then do it for your children. And if you can't do it for your kids, then do it for your grandkids, because they're coming. I mean, I find that it's a personal responsibility to be the best that I can be for this generation, for future generations. It's almost like you're stopping the tide, if you think of it that way. But
exactly.
I think with parents, it's so important. It's so important.
And I think that one of the best cases that maybe, I'll just talk to you about for a minute, I had a woman who was part of my network many years ago. Her life has gone on. She's found a happy marriage. But she was married to a man who was very physically abusive to her. And, with this, she just stayed in that marriage for whatever the reasons were. And she took the abuse, and it was also emotionally abusive, but the physical abuse was constant. And then her daughter married someone who was very physically abusive to her. And all of a sudden, ding went off in her head, and she said, she's carrying on my legacy. And that was the defining point for her of when she had to leave her marriage. She said, I have to be the role model to show my daughter, no, this is not acceptable behavior. Why would you think it is? And then she said, because I'm accepting it. She doesn't have to accept it, but she won't do it if I'm still accepting it. So I think that children, a lot of times, they see this is the norm, and their moms are accepting it. They think that's what it's supposed to be, right?
Absolutely. But, the other part of that is it's really important, especially with physical abuse, because people feel shame by that. They're embarrassed. They're ashamed. They feel that, I should be stronger and I should be doing more, and then they end up getting back in the same cycle. But there's a whole cycle of abuse. This goes for physical abuse, emotional abuse, verbal abuse, whatever it may be. And the cycle is as follows. There's some sort, everything's fine. And then there's some sort of tension and things start building up and then things start getting difficult. And then there's an incident. And then after the incident, the abuser feels relieved of the pressure, if you will. Best way I can describe it. And things are there's kind of a calm period. And then the cycle starts again. So in my case, my ex, I would be in a puddle on the floor crying. Just a mess. And I remember one night I slept on the couch and he came downstairs and he's like, hey, you want to go out for breakfast? I'm like, you told me last night that you never wanted to see me again. And he said, oh, yeah, sorry about that. And that's how it was. Sorry about that. And sorry about that became the norm for the abuse cycle. So if you are in especially a physical abusive situation, the cycle can shorten. And that's when it starts getting very dangerous. It's always dangerous, but that's when it starts heightening. The tricky part of all of this is that verbal abuse often leads to physical abuse. So people don't walk in the door and hit somebody. They start by trying to manipulate them and control them through words, emotional abuse, manipulation. So if you can step back and look at it that way, it'll help you understand just how critical it is to stop the cycle And basically, we always come back to taking back your power, pulling back, and taking care of you. And that is the hardest thing for all of us to do. It sounds so simple, but it is incredibly difficult.
And especially if you're a giver and you're a caretaker, because many of us are caretakers, and we usually end up with people who have narcissistic, borderline personalities. And so it's easy to be beaten down and to keep thinking, well, I'm going to change him. I'm going to make him love me. Yes, I will. Yes, I will. But in your article here about emotionally abusive relationships and reclaiming your power, I wanted to go through some of the items here that I thought were just so beautifully written. So your first point here is about buckets and boundaries. Can you talk a little bit about that?
Yeah. So boundaries are super important for every aspect of communication with somebody who's if you're in a toxic, manipulative, or abusive relationship. And boundaries are really important. So you take care of what's important to you, right? So if you think about it as like a bucket, so if you're carrying a bucket, that is everything in your world you're carrying, and somebody next to you is carrying their bucket. But you don't get into their stuff, and they don't get into yours. So if somebody is saying to you, you know, you shouldn't be wearing that dress today because you look fat, that's none of their business, really, because you're carrying your own bucket, and boundaries are really important for establishing what you will put up with, what you won't, and who's responsible for what. So they sound so simple, but most times if you come from any sort of dysfunctional environment, and I would say 99.9% of us have in some form or fashion, a lot of times there's a very big lack of boundaries. People make assumptions. People will say, oh, well, you're going to be doing this on Tuesday without even talking to you. So then we start getting into communication threads. How does that work? What are you going to say to that? Right? Are you just going to say, to hell I am? Or are you going to say, I'll have to think about it and get back to you? Totally changes the conversation. So anything...
I think a lot of women really need to learn, you know, assertiveness skills. And I feel that so many of... I'm saying us because I certainly always put myself in this category. So many of us don't know how to express ourselves and ask for what we want. We just... you know, don't ask for ourselves because we don't think we're worthy enough of asking. And so we just become, you know, silent participants and doing things and resenting it more and more because we're afraid to say what we want. And I think that the beginning of starting to put boundaries is saying, I'll have to think about it or I'll get back to you. You don't have to make a firm commitment at that moment if that's hard for you to do. But that's an excellent answer that you can give someone.
Absolutely. It took me 43 years to learn this. And I mean, it really did, because I was constantly feeling like I wasn't understood or I was doing things I didn't want to and people were, you know, assuming for me. And I just thought, what am I missing here? The best thing to learn is the word I. I statements.
Yeah, and that's your next statement, I statements. So
okay.
Let's talk about that.
I statements. Okay, so... if you say to somebody the word you came in the door late, you did this, you did that, we'll use a child, you didn't pick up your broom, okay? No matter who it is, if the person hears you, that person immediately gets defensive because it's about them. It doesn't matter what you're saying. And with these abusers, they're heightened sensitivity to this. So if you say, you didn't tell me that, they'll say, oh, yes, I did, and then you can escalate right away. Instead of using the word you, you change it to I, and you own all of your communication. So you would say, back to the child scenario, you didn't pick up your room. Instead of that, even with kids, you can say, I've noticed your room's not picked up, and you know what the rule is. No TV until your room's picked up, so I think you need to go up there and pick it up. Totally changes the conversation. Because when you use the word I, you're owning the communication. And then you can come into phrases. I mean, I literally had these written down on a sticky note for a long time in front of my phone. I had to teach myself, like, I'll have to think about that. I don't know. Let me wonder. I'm not sure. And here's a good one to stop people in their tracks. Why would you ask me that? And people, I mean, that just puts it right there. Why would you ask me that? Why is that? or help me understand. I don't think I understand correctly. You're asking me to make you dinner and it's midnight? Is that what you're saying? You know, any of those words. My sister taught me another really good one, which was the word tricky. You know, I would say, ooh, that's tricky. I don't know. I'm going to have to get back to you on that because all of a sudden the argument's gone, right? I mean, I'm sure you've heard this before, but no is a complete sentence. So It doesn't have to be, that's another piece of communication. It doesn't have to be no, comma, because I think it's a better thing to do. It could just be no.
Uh-huh.
And
which brings me to the
right?
next point that you make here, which I love. Give it a big mental whatever. And you
exactly.
said it took me 40 years to realize that if a question was asked of me and an answer was demanded, that I could make the choice and not answer. When someone is coming
exactly.
at you, my term for how verbal abusers engage in demanding and threatening behavior with their words, they are often working to get you to talk to them so they can argue and attack. And to get you to talk to them, they will often ask you questions. If you're in a verbally abusive relationship, you will then try to answer and try to explain, all to no avail. Instead of engaging, try meeting every demand, comment, etc., with a whatever, and simply let it go. Realizing this is easier said than done, I used to write this out on a piece of paper and carry it with me. It was a great
yes.
reminder that I could just disengage rather than try to get them to reason with me. And I thought, boy, I wish I knew this 40 years ago. You know, I could have really
right?
said whatever in a lot of situations. But I've told this to members of my group since I've read it in your article. I said, boy, this Kim has it really down pat. Just learn how to say whatever.
Whatever. You know, you're this, you're that, you didn't do this. You go, okay, whatever. I mean, you just don't
right.
have to give
I'm not
it the
gonna
power.
Argue with you. Whatever.
Exactly.
Now,
it's a hook. Now, on the flip side of that, part of our responsibility is understanding what our triggers are. So it could be that somebody says terrible, terrible things to us, but then when they question what we spend money on, we start getting pissed off because we're like, no, wait a minute, now you're getting into my bucket, right? So Understanding that, and what will happen oftentimes if people know how to manipulate you and you change what you react to, they'll try other things. So they'll be like, okay, well, that's not working. And so they'll try to hook you with something else. And it might be that they complain about how much money you spend, and then they come back to you, and it might be that they're, you know, back to the physical aspects of your body or something like that. And if they know that you're sensitive to that, and that's very sensitive to you, they might come at you for that. And so that's really when you've got to understand who you are. You've got to have a really good internal clock and go, okay, wait a minute. I know that this is hard for me. Whatever. Okay. Your choice. Yeah, you don't like it? Okay. I don't like your toes. How's that? I mean, you know, you can just keep it on the high level because once you start engaging, you've lost. You're just not going to come out with a good solution. It's not going to happen. I
Can
think
you
the other
explain
part
a little
of this
bit?
Is,
No, I'm sorry. I was going to ask if you could explain
no,
a little bit before
okay.
we go on. What's the mentality of somebody who's doing this to you? Why are they like this? What makes them attack you?
Control. It's usually control. And it's usually people who are insecure. Certainly with your audience, if they're in this situation where they're getting any sort of manipulation or emotional abuse, then the person who's doing that does not feel comfortable with who they are or what they are, whatever it is. It doesn't have to be a sexual thing. It just could be who they are, what kind of money they make or their job or whatever it is. But it's control. And it's people who are insecure who want to control other people because they think that that keeps them secure. And instead of focusing on them, they focus on you. Now, the trick for us is that we think by helping them and giving to them and understanding them, it's going to make a difference. But what will not work? You cannot love them out of this, talk them out of this, help them out of this, change them out of this, go to therapy and get them fixed. You can't do that. That's their journey. My focus is helping you understand that you're there to take care of you. This is our journey. We're all here carrying our own buckets. our own boundaries. We've got our suitcase of values. We may be in wonderful or horrible relationships, but as soon as somebody starts trying to manipulate and control you, it is your job to stand up for yourself. And part of that process, we don't know how to do it. A lot of us have never been taught. I certainly was never taught. So we have to start, step back and start learning. Okay, so how do I do this? Well, communication, what do I do? Well, I can say whatever. I can just, even if I don't say whatever, I can give it a mental whatever, dude. Like, okay, whatever. Or I can use my I statements. Right? I can understand that I'm very comfortable and I am allowed to say no. No, that's not going to work for me. Well, what is going to work for you? What's going to happen? I don't know. I'll have to get back to you. Well, when are you going to get back to me? I don't know. I don't know. I'll have to think about that. Well, why do you have to think about it? See you later. Right? So it changes everything. It takes two to tango.
Right.
And
I think these guys really look for you to, I think they really look for you to fall into the trap so they can argue with you and make you feel you're responsible for whatever the problem is.
Oh, my God, absolutely. And the one thing I was going to mention is, as far as anger goes, this is an important aspect, a really important point to make. There's nothing wrong with anger. Anger is a secondary emotion. Before you get angry, you feel something. You feel disrespected. You feel taken advantage of. You feel slighted. The abuser feels not respected, whatever it may be. There's nothing wrong with being angry. It's what people do with anger, right? So anger to me is very similar to stress. So remember Pigpen from Charlie Brown? And he always liked to walk around and it looked like he had dirt all around him. To me, that's like stress. You walk around and it's just all around you. You kind of have to get it out of you. You have to go work it out of you. If you don't work out, that's fine. You can write it out, cry it out, talk it out. Whatever you've got to do, scream it out in the pillow, right? Call a friend and talk for an hour. Whatever it is, you've got to understand what works for you, back to the knowing and caretaking of us, and get that stress out of you. Get that frustration out of you, because that is where we continue to hold that and hold that. And we can have physical illness, and we're much weaker. It hurts us at work. It hurts us at home. I mean, the whole thing just starts catapulting on itself.
It's true. You know, it's funny. I have an online private support group, and there's a lot of venting that goes on in there, and I always allow women to do that because I feel it's much healthier to vent in a private group, not in front of your children, not in front of their, you know, your friends that you don't want to know your business. But a lot of times just venting is really important to get that anger out, because if you don't get it out, as you say, you internalize it, you get sick from it. And also, I really do feel if you hang on to anger and you can never let go of it, then eventually that anger does turn into bitterness. And then once bitter, then it's only hurting you. It's not hurting somebody else.
Let me tell you, you know who's sleeping well at night? All of these people. The people that are abusing, the people that are manipulating, the toxic people, these guys in your audience and their spouses and whatever they're going through, they're sleeping well at night. It's us that are upset,
Absolutely.
Trying to figure it out, right? Getting on the
That's night, what I always say. We're the ones who are sitting and crying our sleep. In fact, I met a wonderful woman yesterday, and she told me, you know, so typical of the patterns of so many of our women, that she would go to bed at night crying herself to sleep, and I can remember when I was doing that. And, you know, then your husband's sleeping like a log. And you're thinking, here I am, and I'm hurting so bad, and he's sitting there and he's laying there sleeping peacefully, because they don't feel they've done anything wrong.
Right. That's exactly right. And they've taken their frustrations, their issues, whatever it is, and they've handed them right over to you. And you're like, oh, okay. And then you're walking around trying to figure out how to handle it. I mean, it's a destructive pattern. But again, we always want to come back to taking care of us. And what can we do?
And I think it takes time till women realize that. And many of them feel very downtrodden with emotional abuse on a daily basis. You start losing who you are or not even recognizing who you are. And I think that's very typical of emotional abuse. And how do you start finding yourself again? When somebody comes to you and they say, look, I'm beaten down, I don't even know who I am, where do you start?
You start by understanding that you need to be as good a friend to you as you are to everybody else. So if somebody came to you in distress and needed something, you'd probably run something over, take care of them, et cetera. But when it comes to us, we don't do that. So what we need to do is understand that's number one. And then number two is we've got to kind of pull ourselves through it step by step and understand how we got here, understand how to manage the stress, how to manage our communication, and then where we're going with this. Most people, by the time they're seeking help, are ready to get up and go. But they don't know how to stay at it. They don't know what to do. It doesn't matter if they have kids in the house or not. Some people, even with, you know, no children at home, are scared to death to leave. Money has a huge part of it. And there's a lot of embarrassment and shame coming through this. It's hard. I mean, even you're going to mourn part of even letting go of a bad marriage. I mean, it's hard. Right? Things are changing.
It is. I say even the worst of marriages are hard to break up because there's so many different issues that go along in a marriage to start with. But I do want to emphasize this, and maybe you can speak a little bit about it. I'm hoping that, you know, we're on the same page, but if not, that's fine too. I really feel that for children it's so important that they grow up in a functional household, and that, you know, one of the things that Dr. Phil always says, it's better to come from a dysfunctional family than be in a dysfunctional family. And I grew up in a very dysfunctional family, and I was very dysfunctional because I didn't know from what a norm was. The norm was what I saw in front of me. And my parents were constantly fighting, and I was constantly internalizing it, that it was my fault that they were unhappy because I felt they were forced to stay together because of the children. And they would fight, and, you know, eventually when they run out of things to fight about, it always goes to the kids, because that's a very natural thing you can fight over. So my brother and I would be up late at night listening to them, even though they thought they were handling it well by waiting till we went to sleep. You know, we could hear right through the walls while they were arguing about it. And I just feel that children growing up in an environment where they feel they're at fault for their parents' unhappiness isn't helping the children. And women often say, well, my children never see that I'm happy. I never cry in front of them. Children, I always say children know. They're very smart and perceptive. Would you agree with that?
Absolutely. Absolutely. Not only will they know, but as we mentioned earlier, they're going to learn this behavior. Whether they see you crying or not is really secondary. What's really primary is, are you fulfilled and happy? Is there stress in the household? Is it a healthy environment and a healthy relationship? You know, when I realized early on in my marriage that I was in this verbally abusive relationship, actually, I take that back. I didn't know it was verbal abuse. I didn't have a word for it. I just knew it was awful. And I found a therapist, and I went to this therapist, and she gave me a book called The Verbally Abusive Relationship by Patricia Evans. I don't know if you know that, but it's a great book.
Mm-hmm.
And I think I read that thing in the parking lot. I was so thankful that there was a word for what I was going through. So what I started doing was working on what my next steps were. And immediately I was like, that's it. I mean, I want a separation. I want a divorce. I'm done. And unfortunately, I had a therapist who didn't believe in divorce. She felt that family should stay together, and she really worked with me on staying. And in my situation, things just continued to escalate. I stayed for 5 more years. It just got worse and worse and worse. And what ended up happening was the better I became at managing him, the worse he got. And we finally had an issue one night, and he pushed me. And I thought, I know exactly what's coming down the pike. I mean, I've read all of this. This is not going to end well. So I went to her, and I said, he's pushed me. I can't stay. And she said, okay, well, now we'll work on getting you out. I thought, no, wait a minute. This has been a horrible situation for these children to be in, for them to see. I have been stressed beyond belief. Even if we think we're keeping it together, the kids can pick up on it. So I quickly separated and divorced after that. But it was the best thing I ever did. I think that if you're not, I think it kind of comes down to something really simple. If you're not in an authentic relationship, then it's not healthy. And if you're not in a healthy relationship, then it's not good for your kids. And if you're in a situation where it's not good for your kids, then it's your job as a parent to do what is good for your kids. I think it kind of boils down to something that simple. Because they pick up on it, they're learning, they're watching, they're seeing. It doesn't really have much to do with the rest of it. What we traditionally think of as, well, I haven't cried, we haven't fought today, we're not fighting in front of anybody, so they don't know. I mean, they know.
And our children have a lot of other issues that, you know, beyond the ordinary issue. For instance, today kids are very sophisticated, and many times they know what their fathers are doing long before their mothers find out. And they may confront their fathers. I mean, I have a lot of articles on this. And the fathers tell them, well, listen, if you say anything to your mother, it's going to break up our family. And so they become the keeper of the secret, which is a very dangerous thing for children to have to live with. And I've seen really negative effects on their growing up because of this, having all kinds of emotional problems, physical problems. You know, I've had some of them as guests on my show to let parents know how being that keeper of the secret really impacted their lives and their relationships in the future, and feeling like they had to hide it from their mother because they didn't want to hurt their mother. You know, I think it's very sad when I have to hear those situations. So it's really important.
It's
for the
heartbreaking.
Right?
Heartbreaking.
I know.
Any parent that says to a child, don't tell, you know, hold this secret. We're back to if then, right? If you do this, then the family will break up. Well, how about this? And? Right? And? Then what? Well, the family will break up, so the family breaks up. I mean, the family can't, I'm not trying to be cavalier about it, but holding that type of secret is a horrible way to treat a child, and the responsibilities that that adult is putting on that child, I mean, that's egregious. That's just...
isn't it?
It's very
selfish, and you know, it's really hurting your child, and yet they don't see it that way. They just don't have that understanding that this is hurtful to the children.
Well, that's because they're taking care of their interests, right?
Right.
Anybody
well,
that who's
could
doing
be
that
with
to
anybody
a child.
Who's right, exactly. Or picking a child, or having children pick one parent over the other. You know, that's another technique, you know, of really beating down on the children emotionally. You know, who do you love better?
Another horrible
thing. Isn't it?
Yeah.
Or, you know, trying to tear one child against the other. But that's why there's so much involved in being a good parent and being a strong family unit. And I think that people can co-parent without living in the same house. I've seen successful cases where there's the common goal of the children having healthy relationships, and it doesn't matter if the father is gay and the mother is straight, if there's a father is committed to the family and doing the right thing, you know, as far as giving them emotional, financial support, instead of just ignoring them and living his life, you know, because now he's come to terms with himself and he wants his own life back. You know, when you have children, that has to be your first responsibility. You can't just make them like, you know, they're the sideline there. And I think that's, you know, a lot of these guys are just out on their own now for the first time. You know, they feel they've done their job. They've waited till the kids are grown, and now they're going to be out. And we have a lot of complications here. So that, you know, people that don't have, you have enough under the best of circumstances of divorce, these are just some extra ones. When you talk about watching yourself talk, can you talk a little bit about that?
I often think
we're in an emotionally abusive relationship, we start incorporating some of the same damaging words we heard in our daily thoughts.
Right. So, you know, we're back to somebody saying to you something that's inappropriate or damning or critical or whatever it is. And then you start kind of going around thinking to yourself, well, God, maybe it's me. Maybe I am not smart enough, and maybe I should lose 10 pounds. And I mean, maybe that's the problem. So I think, again, you got to give yourself that gap. You got to give yourself that space to understand that you can easily incorporate what's being said to you and start owning it. So I find that I would write things out like, okay, he said to me, I didn't make dinner enough. And then I would write out, okay, but I made dinner 6 nights this week. So check, that's not right. I mean, I almost would let data drive my emotional health. Like, no, wait a minute, think about it. I mean, and some of this is subjective, right? Some of it is, oh, you should be doing this, or you're not smart enough. Well, that could be 1,000 things, right? There's 1,000 ways to organize smart. It could be emotional IQ. It could be a ton of things. So when you get into something that's that subjective, you have to think to yourself, no, wait a minute. I was smart enough for him to marry me. So all of a sudden, I'm not smart enough. So you know what? I'm not going to incorporate that and make myself feel bad that I'm not smart enough, because that's not really what this issue is about. And I think another piece of this is giving yourself a gap or a space so that you're watching yourself talk, you're understanding, okay, now wait a minute, all these things happen to me and I'm thinking about them all the time, and I'm just going to give myself one gap. Before I react, before I internalize this, before I take on this issue, I'm going to step back and I'm going to give myself some space, even if it's 10 minutes or an hour or a day or whatever it may be that you need, just to give yourself a little bit of breathing space before you react, so that you are giving yourself the time to let all of this wash over you, let the words wash over you, think about it, write it out, ponder it, and then I think you kind of come back to the table a little bit better equipped. And this is not only just for self-reflection, but when you're in the heat of the moment. I mean, you know, things escalate, and then all of a sudden it's like, wait a minute. I did this with my kids one time, totally different scenario, but I said, you know what, I am giving myself a timeout, and I will be back in 10 minutes. I am going to say something I don't need to say. So it's the same idea with the self-talk. I mean, stepping back.
But I think you gave a really great idea, Kim, when you're saying, and you could talk a little bit about this. When you keep hearing these messages from your husband, you know, you don't cook enough, you don't look good enough, whatever the complaints are, you know, start writing them down and watching how many times he keeps saying the same thing over and over to make you feel bad about yourself. And maybe that will help you realize that this is not what it's really about. This is him just trying to knock you down to have control over you and to make you feel bad. You think that would be a good idea?
Well,
kind of journal it.
And in your case with your audience, I would start writing down things like what is being said and what the issues are. Like, wait a minute. What is the problem with me? Why am I the bad guy here? I mean, whatever it is, but log it down, write it down, and then go back to it and look at it. And the healthier you are and the more space you get away from this, the more you'll realize sometimes these things are just crazy and absurd. And you'll look at it and go, that's just not even right. And it'll help fuel your power and help you get back in place where you need to be. So the self-talk is a big piece of it, because you really want to make sure that that doesn't become daily part of your fabric. I had a painter here recently who was at the house, and she said, oh, I know, I'm terrible at this. Oh, I'm terrible at this. I'm sorry. You know, I never do this right. I say, no, that's not true. You did that right. This looks good. But her self-talk is so damaging and so self-defeating. It can really be, you know, we need to be our own best friend.
I think that's great advice. I'd also like to ask your advice on this. I tell women that after you're coming out of a relationship that's a damaging relationship, it can be from emotional abuse, physical, you know, being married in the wrong relationship for whatever the reasons, gay, straight. You need time before you even think about meeting somebody else to really evaluate who you are, where you are, and get help to put you on better grounds. Because I really do believe these relationships are damaging to us. And if we're not really strong once we get out, you know, don't build yourself up before you start another relationship. You know, it's like being in the water and having sharks, they can smell the blood, you know, and they just come at you. Well, it's kind of like that, right? You know,
I do, all that human blood. It's a great visual analogy. I think you're right, and I think the other thing is understand that when you come out of this, you just want to feel better. You know, you just you want a day where you're feeling good about yourself and you don't feel put upon. So sometimes we'll start looking for somebody immediately to fill that void. The gift is if we look. There's no rush. There's how many billions of people on this planet? There's a lot of men. There's a lot of opportunities. It may not seem like it as we're sitting in our house, staring at our computer, feeling bad about ourselves. But the world is big. And I think we need to trust life a little bit and take some time for us to heal. Because you're right, you'll attract the same thing. I did exactly what you're talking about. I tried hard not to get into a relationship, but I started dating. And I dated a man who turned out to be, he had the same issues. It was kind of like a wolf in sheep's clothing. I mean, he was he was the same guy, but he came dressed very differently. And, you know, when I first met him, he was fun, and I mean with a capital F fun. I had a great time with him, and fun was what I wanted. So I started dating this guy long distance, and it turned out he was a mess. And I told him, I broke up with him on the phone and realized he was an alcoholic, and he was manipulative, and he was toxic with a capital T. And he literally said to me, "Who the hell do you think you are telling me when you will and will not see me?" I said, "Oh, that's the game. You are so out of here. This is the same thing I've been dealing with." He got on a plane. Mm-hmm. He came up. I had to call the police to get him away, and I thought, I am done. I mean, I just started getting to the point where I didn't trust myself. So you are correct. Once you get out of these relationships, you have to give yourself time to heal. I know you want to feel good. I know you want to feel loved. I know you want to have fun. All of these things can happen in small bits, but I think therapy helps. And taking your time. We feel like we're kind of on a fast push, and then maybe if we find somebody who loves us, then we'll be whole, and then we'll be okay, and all of this will go away. But you are, Bonnie, you nailed it. If we don't figure this out, it's going to come back again.
Right, and you have to be whole going into a relationship. You know, there's so many obstacles, especially as you're getting older, and a lot of our women have been in long-term relationships. So whatever baggage you're carrying, you're meeting somebody else who has baggage as well. And if you don't go in there strong, you know, his baggage is really going to weigh you down because, once again, like you said about yourself, we are kind-giving women. Men know this. They're looking for that kind of a woman. And it doesn't take much to keep pushing us. And even though you think you've made progress because you've recovered for 6 months, you've been in an abusive relationship for years. That doesn't go away in just a few months. And I think therapy, coaching, all of this is really necessary to make the progress that you want to have for your future. And I think that's great that you do coaching. I wanted to mention that to our listeners, that Kim is a wonderful coach. And, you know, if you're listening to this broadcast and you can see her website that's listed here. And, you know, so important for you. I know you can get in touch with Kim through that website, correct?
Oh, yes, yes, yes. Yeah, my email's on there, my number and everything.
Right.
Absolutely.
So.
And, you know, I was going to mention something. This whole thing about discovering another relationship, you know what? Think of it this way. Perspective is key. Use the 70. I have a 70-year-old porch theory, and I actually, now that I'm getting older, I think I should change it to 80. So we'll call it the 80-year-old porch theory. But when you're older and you are sitting on the porch and you're looking back over your life, are you going to be upset that you didn't take time to get to know yourself and heal and really understand what your triggers were, how you got there, and grow? Are you going to be upset that you did or you didn't? Or are you going to think, man, I just jumped right into this couple of relationships and those were kind of painful? If you get a long-term perspective, this little bit of time when you're healing after these relationships is critical, and it really kind of puts it into perspective. You know, when we're in it on a day-to-day basis, we think, oh, my God, it's right now. But when you look back over your life, it's a small amount of time that very few of us afford that opportunity to take. for ourselves.
Mm-hmm.
And I mean, there's a lot of married women that are in a happy relationship that would say, God, I'd give anything for 6 months off just to understand who I am and try to do things like that. I mean, so I think perspective is key. I really do. I think that that's important. And the other part of it is, this is important too, whatever you feel is okay, just remember to be gentle with yourself. You've got enough going on. You've got enough coming at you. You've got enough to manage. Obviously, women in your audience has already got a huge issue sitting in front of them that's painful as can be. So be gentle with yourself and be as good as you are to everybody else.
That's one of the key phrases that my soul sister gal in Canada always says, you know, be gentle with yourself. You know, she always says this to people. And, you know, I used to think, well, why do you have to be gentle with yourself? But, you know, it's really so true. You know, you have enough people tearing at you and knocking you down. And that's where those positive self-thoughts come in. And anything you have to do to build up self-esteem. And we have a lot of shows on here, you know, with other experts also just on self-esteem, on how important it is to really put your life back together through a combination of different things, whether it be coaching, therapy, you know, and learning about yourself before you really go out to meet somebody, because you can't be a complete and a whole person. And I see many of our women just jump out there because after 6 months they think they're ready, and they're not, or after a year, or sometimes 2 years, and they haven't really gotten better themselves. So it's very easy to fall back into those patterns. And I tell women also, you know, you had so little and now you don't want to keep settling for something that's less than what you deserve. Sometimes, like going from that frying pan into the fire, fire into the frying pan, okay, you've been in the fire, so now you don't want to jump into a frying pan. You want to get into, like, some kind of nice bowl without, you know, frying yourself to death, right? Yeah, I mean, it's just amazing to me how women are just so easily, and I can't say anything because I was the same way. You know, I'm the first one to say guilty to everything, that I've done everything wrong until I was able to finally find, you know, my soulmate. That took me many years.
Yes. And I didn't mean to interrupt you. I was just saying that I did the same thing. So I think what you and I are trying to say to everybody is learn from us because, you know, I know you want to feel better, but there's other ways to feel better. And you know what? The reality is, it's just a guy. I mean, they all put their pants on, you know, one leg at a time. They all have dirty underwear. They all have dirty towels. They're just men.
Well,
and
with our women, we were hoping we could get them to take off their pants one leg at a time, Kim. That's the difference. And I do understand that concept. We'd be really happy that they'd just be taking off those pants and not putting them on. But you have to wait for that anyway, because, you know, you're going to get the wrong guy taking off the pants for the wrong reason. You want a man who can love you for who you are, not just want you as a sex object or use you for his own needs. You want a man to love you for all that you're worth, right?
Yes, absolutely. And it doesn't. And that's the other part of this, right? It just doesn't define you. You being in this situation doesn't mean you're bad, not worthy, not lovable, none of that. That is absolutely not about you. It's just something that's happening to you, and you're still worthy, you're still valuable, and so now your job is to take care of you and to step back, take your power back, love yourself, and understand that you're doing this not just for you but for all the generations and everybody around you. Even if you don't have kids, you're doing it for society and the world as a whole because you're helping keep everything healthy and whole and lovable. So I think
well, Kim, I can't thank you enough for being with us tonight. You're fascinating, engaging, wonderful. I just learned so much from you or whatever. But, yeah, that's my new vocabulary word now, ever since I read it a couple of months ago. And I said, I love
whatever.
That word. Yeah, whatever. But I'm hoping if you'll be generous enough, maybe come back in a few months if you don't mind, because there's so much more to talk about.
Oh, I would love to. I'd love to.
I'll be imposing
so
on you.
It's been great. It's been great.
Once again,
I've enjoyed it.
For people to find Kim Roman Corley, it's KimRomanCorley.com. And you can find her on, you know, as you're listening to this broadcast, the website is there. To all of our ladies, have a wonderful week. Love all of you. And Kim, thank you so much. You've been wonderful.
To you, Bonnie. It's been great.
All right. Thanks so much. Take care, and we'll look forward to having you back.
Thanks.
Okay. All right. Bye-bye
now. Thank you so much. All right. Good night.
Bye-bye.